Our next case this morning is in the matter of a petition for clarification of an appropriate unit, Minnesota Association of Professional Employees versus the State of Minnesota. This is file number 820-1088. As all parties are aware, we are conducting this appellate argument by Zoom. The matter is being recorded in an audio manner, but we just wish to once again confirm and warn everyone that there are to be no other private recordings of any kind by any of the attorneys or anyone who's observing. So with that, the relator will have 15 minutes for their argument in chief. Respondent will have 15 minutes. And then finally, the relator will have 5 minutes for rebuttal. So whenever counsel for the relator is ready, you may begin. Just tell us who you are in a loud, clear voice, please.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Justin Cummins, and I'm representing the relator in this matter. This appeal challenges the decision by the Bureau of Mediation Services, or BMS, to allow the Department of Human Services, or DHS, to determine the appropriate bargaining unit. Specifically, BMS allowed DHS to transfer the position at issue, which is referred to as the TED position for short, from a bargaining unit represented by a relator to a bargaining unit represented by AFSCME. The decision should be reversed because it's based on an error of law, because it's arbitrary and capricious, and because it's not supported by substantial evidence. I'll address each of those grounds in order.
Well, before you do that, why don't you address the jurisdictional ground? I'm not really clear from your brief the logic of your argument. Why don't you address that first? And once you're satisfied that you've answered that question, I'd like you to also address standing, assuming there is jurisdiction at BMS to decide the question at all. I'd like you to address how your client has any standing to challenge the classification.
Certainly. Regarding the jurisdiction argument, which was not raised in the statement of the case by DHS. DHS acknowledges on page 17 of its brief that its action resulted in changing a position, changing a bargaining unit, moving the TED position from one bargaining unit to another. And in that context, the bargaining units have been changed. That's something that this.
How is that so? How does moving something out of a unit change the unit?
Because a bargaining unit is defined by the various positions that are in the unit, and by removing a bargaining unit or adding.
Well, hold on. If a position in the unit no longer has the qualifications to be classified in a manner as to be included in the unit, how is that changing the unit?
The union consists of the various positions. And so, yes, certainly the DHS can reclassify. That's not the dispute that the relator has here. The issue is that in doing the reclassification, the DHS removed a position that's been represented by the relator for decades, and put it into a unit represented by a different union, AFSCME. In 2017, the DHS did a reclassification of this very same position, and determined that it should be in a separate classification as part of a consolidation process. But that position remained in a unit, a bargaining unit represented by relator. And so there was no issue from relator's perspective. But ultimately, BMS, not DHS, has the authority and the duty to make a determination about whether a bargaining unit is appropriate. And that determination turns on looking at the positions that are in the new unit, whether it's a function of adding a position or taking away a position from that unit.
So it's your view that then the legislature decided to have an administrative process within the Department of Management and Budget to challenge a classification, and then an altogether different administrative process after that administrative process through BMS to for some other party to make a challenge. That's your position?
Yes, in the sense that there are two tracks here, Your Honor. There's the classification or reclassification track, and then there's the unit determination track.
Right, but once the classification is made, I mean, that seems to be what you're really challenging here is the classification at heart, not the unit, but you're challenging the classification.
Not necessarily, Your Honor, although as a practical matter, that is the case here. In 2017, as I said, the department, DHS, reclassified this very same position and decided that it should be in a different classification as part of
Other than the classification, in what way is your challenge a challenge to the constitution of the unit?
The relator's position here is that a community of interest analysis must be done in relation to the impact on the bargaining unit here that's represented by relator, and for that matter, represented by AFSCME. Because by taking the TED position out of the relator's bargaining unit and putting it into the AFSCME bargaining unit, DHS has changed both units. The community of interest analysis looks at the positions within a bargaining unit to determine whether there's sufficient relationship or connection between these different positions to make it an appropriate unit. That's BMS's authority, that's BMS's duty.
I still don't understand what you're challenging other than the classification. I mean, you're saying that you're challenging the decision because it alters the unit. But how are you doing it any other way than to challenge the classification itself? What other basis do you have in your challenge? I don't see any other basis.
Well, going back to 2017, there was not a challenge by the relator because the bargaining unit, a bargaining unit represented by the relator, continued to include this position. The practical impact of the relator's challenge, Your Honor, you're correct, is to challenge reclassification to the extent that there is a question about whether the new bargaining units are appropriate. PELRO requires BMS to do a community of interest analysis to determine whether a given bargaining unit is appropriate.
Is there any case law you found in which this court or the Supreme Court has recognized the jurisdiction of BMS to decide a classification decision at DHS or any other element of the MMB?
No, there isn't, Your Honor, but to be clear, we are not seeking to challenge the classification per se. We are seeking a determination about whether the bargaining unit is appropriate after DHS made the classification or reclassification that it did.
But you're doing so only by change. So let me be clear. You're suggesting that after the reclassification, that I'm not sure I understand your argument, given the fact that the point that you just made, given the fact that the only basis of your argument is the classification itself.
Your Honor, the basis for relator's argument is that the bargaining unit has been changed, and that requires a community of interest analysis. PELRA requires that, and PELRA and the statute under which the state proceeds here must be read in harmony with each other. The DHS's approach here is essentially to say that the State Personnel Management Act overrides the obligations under PELRA, and that's not appropriate. The State Personnel Management Act must be read consistent with, where possible, consistent with the PELRA and vice versa. And the way to do that is for BMS to have done a community of interest analysis here, which it did not do.
So just to make sure I understand, there are bargaining units set up by PELRA. There's a professional unit, there's a technical unit, there are other units. Let's say A, B, and C classifications are in technical, D, E, and F are in professional. This position effectively moved from D to C, right? It moved from one classification that fell under professional and move to a an existing classification that's technical. Is that right?
That's correct. That's what.
And those okay. And those classifications remain the same within their respective bargaining units. The issue is where this position should have been classified. Is that right?
The issue is whether by moving the TED position to a different bargaining unit, the impact of that is to make the bargaining unit where the position was transferred to appropriate and the bargaining unit where it was removed from are appropriate. That's the ultimate.
Can I ask you I just took it off my screen, but the BMS decision that involved the University of Minnesota from maybe, when was it, 2003, it was in the briefing.
Yes.
You know, was that wrongly decided in your view?
That was not wrongly decided, but it was deciding a different issue. That concerned BMS's authority under Section 179A.10 Subdivision 4. And what we are challenging, our challenge is based on 179A.09 Subdivision 2. Again, we are seeking a determination about the appropriateness of the bargaining unit.
Well, I know you're citing a different statute, but that decision concluded that the Bureau does not have jurisdiction to review a position assignment to classifications within the University of Minnesota, et cetera. How is that different? Besides just saying it results in a different bargaining unit, because that sort of goes without saying, the classification file fits within the bargaining unit. And if you change the classification, the bargaining unit that outcome will happen. But I'm not sure I understand the substantive difference in terms of what actually the Bureau decided in terms of its authority with respect to review of positions.
Well, BMS's own policies and procedures say, and the specific quote is, all disputes involving the assignment of positions, unquote, shall be decided by BMS. And that's in their policies and procedures, which is included in the addendum at 45, that's section 3.07.03.
And in fairness to your position, it was something I want to hear from the other side about is the rules, as I look at 5510.0310, Minnesota rules, it talks about unification clarification or a clarification petition under Part 24, and describes it as a determination of the commissioner, which I think is the commissioner of BMS, regarding an appropriate unit involving inclusions or exclusions of positions or job classifications in appropriate unit. So I'm a little confused about that rule. And while, I mean, I can imagine how you would argue it, but I'll give you that opportunity to do how that applies here. I mean, when it talks about both positions and classifications.
Thank you, Your Honor. And so I'll move very quickly to the standing issue, as I don't have much time left. The union relator has standing here on several grounds. First, which I've addressed indirectly already, which is 179A.09 subdivision 1, which talks about the criteria that BMS must consider, specifically the community of interest factors, when determining what positions will be in an appropriate bargaining unit. And the reference in that provision is to petitioning employee representatives. That is relator in this context.
Would that include both AFSCME and MAPE if they're both fighting over this position? Do they both have standing to challenge it?
Yes, that would be a unit clarification scenario. And that's in fact what relator sought here. And the rule 5510.0410, subpart 2C1, talks about seeking clarification of a bargaining unit as to which positions must be in the unit to make it appropriate. And so a party like relator, for that matter, AFSCME, would file a petition, as relator did here, to seek clarification about the appropriateness of the unit that's already in place in light of whatever changes happened or didn't happen. And then finally, the BMS policies and procedures itself, which I already referred to, which is section 3.07.031I2, which talks about how BMS handles these types of disputes, that they have jurisdiction to address these issues, and a party like relator has standing to bring these types of issues. If I may, just the last few seconds I have, I want to note that the law in which DHS relies says that the job audit, which triggered all this, the job audit regarding the TED position, that audit is not authorized under the State Personnel Management Act unless there's been a significant change in the job duties over time. That's section 43A.07 subdivision 2. And there was no such significant change over time. Even BMS's decision acknowledges at addendum 40 that the job description has maintained essentially the same content throughout the relevant time.
Mr. Cummins, we'll now hear from counsel for the respondent, please.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the court. My name is Hillary Taylor. I'm an Assistant Attorney General here today representing state respondents. Your Honors, this case is an improper challenge to MMB's role and authority as the Chief Personnel Manager of the Executive Branch's Civil Service. I mean, at its core, this is a union without standing or legal support attempting to dispute the job audit and reallocation of a single position from one existing classification to another more appropriate classification, not wholesale changes to these classifications or bargaining units. And this is a normal statutorily driven process, Your Honors, that's existed for almost five decades at this point. There are thousands of routine job audits that occur annually under the state's 43A authority, and the law simply doesn't support that every time a job audit and reclassification occurs that we're going to need 43A review and then jump over wordsmith under Pelham review. So if I may, just by way of a brief roadmap, say, I'm gonna address 3 points here today, Your Honors. The first two are important threshold questions for this court, as state respondents, quite honestly, are dealing with this as a recurring issue of both union and BMS overreach. But then we will address a third point, which is essentially an argument in the alternative. So first, MAPE doesn't have standing to challenge the reclassification of this single position. Second, BMS lacks jurisdiction under Peller to review MAPE's underlying petition and potentially reallocate this position among classifications. Just as actually the alternative argument, which is quite honestly the easy question, that we're under an arbitrary and capricious standard for purposes of the underlying order. And that this, at the end of the day, BMS's decision was correct and supported by substantial evidence. I'm sorry, Your Honor.
No, that's fine. So let's start with BMS's authority. I think we understand factually what's happened here. Explain to me what the rule that I just looked at with respect to what a unit clarification or clarification petition means, which references both positions or job classifications. Why does that not give the union, who I think can bring unit clarification positions, petitions, why does that not cover what we're looking at here?
So the rule you're looking at, Your Honor, subpart 24 is generally defined in unit clarification petitions. And it does note, yes, so the inclusion or exclusions of positions or job classifications may be an appropriate topic for unit clarification petition. But Your Honor, that general definition doesn't go in to provide a basis for jurisdiction independent and apart from what the statute explicitly says. So when we're in the world of dealing with state employees, state units, we're going to be living in 179A.10, subdivisions 1-4. And that's where it more specifically defines what positions, what classifications BMS has jurisdiction to review and then potentially allocate. And so when I'm turning to that statute here, we see in subdivision 1 that PELRA is unambiguous. It's clear. Subdivision 1 states that for purposes of state employees, The units provided in this section are the only appropriate units for executive branch employees. We jump down to subdivision two, which you, Your Honor, you already know are the specific delineated units. And then it says that the commissioner may only make changes to schedules of these units and classifications as required by law or as provided by subdivision four. So that is now where the home of BMS's jurisdiction is for purposes of determining unit clarification petitions with state units, state classifications, and then for purposes of Nate's argument regarding the positions themselves. This language is clear. I am going to quote from the direct language to show that our argument regarding jurisdiction shows that BMS lacked it completely here, that BMS's commissioner shall assign state employee classifications, court employee classifications, U of M, it goes on and on, and then it says, and supervisory position. That's not what this position is here. And then it says, it goes on to say, to the appropriate units when the classifications or positions, so directing back to the delineated position, supervisory and classifications, have not been assigned or they have changed in occupational content subsequent to us. So Your Honors, the language of PELRA provides for specific situations in which BMS may determine if there is an issue, and with the exception of supervisory or confidential positions, PELRA did not grant BMS authority to determine the bargaining unit assignment of individual positions to classification.
Ms. Taylor, I found your arguments on jurisdiction and standing very compelling. For the sake of argument, assuming we agree with them, would you be asking us then rather to affirm the BMS decision on the merits, you would simply be asking us to dismiss the appeal in its entirety?
So you're anticipating kind of where I'm going. Actually, to provide clarity on that point, Your Honor, I think vacater would be more appropriate.
Okay. Vacater so is we would court. Simply vacate the decision rather than dismiss the, and then dismiss the appeal, or just vacate the decision?
I think just vacating the decision would be sufficient, Your Honor. I think that's an important note because it would be addressing the implicit finding BMS has made regarding jurisdiction. Although I would note that if there is something that would be more apropos to make that statement in addition to vacating, I hadn't quite noted it or found it in the law, but perhaps it could be there. Essentially, Your Honors, I thought long and hard about why these two important issues at the outset are important threshold questions for this court. And I think it just boils down to the fact that this is an area of the intersection of these two statutes that's been a recurring issue that just, there's no case law that provides for clarity on this for the underlying quasi-judicial decision maker, for the interacting parties. Time and time again, we've been encountering this. And so—
You were talking about subdivision four before, also that question about disposition, which is important. I just want to make sure I understand it. Subdivision four and 179.8.10, which is talks about commissioner's assignment, et cetera. And then it says, when the classifications or positions have not been assigned or have been significantly modified in occupational content subsequent to assignment. What does that last phrase, does that last phrase have any correlation to what we're talking about here? How do I understand that last phrase with respect to a position change in content?
So it's not the situation before the court because the class itself has not changed significantly or been modified in occupational content. But Your Honors, this often arises where we've seen classifications with a number of positions where suddenly they're grouped and morphed over time into something that's just not reflective of what perhaps the classification title is. Rather here, we have a routine audit and reclassification of a position under 43A authority, which I note that I think confusingly Relator said that we can only do if there's a modification over time to the content of the position itself. I would note that under 43A07, that also MMB's commissioner has authority to revise and administer and independently conduct classification studies upon request by an appointed authority, which is what's occurred here too. But neither here nor there, Your Honors, that provides a basis for BMS authority, that specific provision, when we're dealing with wholesale changes of classes, morphs over time to classes. And I'm realizing, as I'm talking about this, we're talking about distinct buckets that I think relators are starting to conflate. Positions are the smaller bucket. These are statutorily defined terms under 43A02. And that is a grouping of job duties and responsibilities assigned by authority. Then we have classifications. That's a grouping of alike positions and positions with similar responsibilities that provides a way for pay equity by the employer, et cetera. And it also provides a basis for the largest bucket, which is the bargaining unit.
Right. The part that confuses me is both in subdivision 4 and then the rule I referenced, it says classifications or positions, you know, and it just seems, you know, I understand a scheme that you're describing, and it's just a little bit confusing when it talks about classifications or positions and puts them on equal footing with respect to change of content or what unit clarification. I think that's the part that is not as perhaps elegantly explained as what we're talking about here.
And maybe to direct correctly from the rule then, Your Honor, to the statute, I think when it's saying positions or classifications, what the rule is saying is these are the delineated classifications we see that it can determine. U of M, state employee units, state court units. But then the positions at which it's equating on that same level is supervisory or confidential positions. Those are the only two delineated in subdivision 2. And it is important to note that those are very specific defined circumstances. We're including or excluding wholesale something that could change the bargaining unit, those supervisory and confidential positions based on their content. And Your Honor, also to address that rule, once again, I would note that this court has encountered this issue before where there's a slightly vague rule, but a more specific statute. MAPE cites the case where the court encountered this, the In Re Decertification 2007 published Court of Appeals case. Pinsight 306 says the court need not consider the language of the rules when the statute's unambiguous on its face. Your Honors, the jurisdictional issue here, the standing issue here, these two threshold questions are clearly delineated in the statute. BMS is neither an appointing authority nor an employee, so it can't protest those reclassifications. And then for purposes of jurisdiction, BMS is not determining a wholesale classification change issue here or a supervisory or confidential employee inclusion or exclusion.
I see. So subdivision 4 references supervisory positions and then later says positions. When it says later positions, you're saying it's referring to supervisory positions. And I think you're saying it also refers, although it doesn't say it, to confidential.
Yes, Your Honor. And if I may also jump back slightly, just briefly back to Judge Connolly's question about what we would ask the court to do here. I might have alluded this, and pardon me if this is slightly bold to do, but it seems like perhaps an important case to consider for precedential weight. I thought long and hard about this issue, given that there's no case law on this point. It is a threshold issue.
So you'd like us to kill Mr. Cummins and bury him all at once, right?
Yes, I even thought about what syllabus points could do that. That also is partially bold, but the idea that we could have clarity where it says in the law, a case law that is, that Minnesota statute delegates authority to MMB, not BMS, to review and reallocate classified positions among classifications. And then when talking about standing, we could have the point made also that only appointing authorities or employees affected by position reclassification decisions may appeal those reclassification decisions or its state to MMB or its state employer.
Well, why would we address standing if the jurisdictional issue is dispositive?
It would be kind of the burying on the burying. It would be something that's not required, Your Honor.
So you want both the touchdown and the 2-point conversion?
I think so. Yes.
Counsel, you talked about your syllabus, and we welcome, and I'm glad you did suggest what a syllabus point should be if we were to issue a precedential opinion. You suggest it in terms of delegation, which is, I guess, one way, but even if this were not delegated authority, I'm not sure, I guess I was just thinking in terms of BMS lacks authority to do X is what you're saying, or lacks jurisdiction to do X.
Yes, and Your Honor, when I'm talking about delegating authority, I guess what I'm talking about is MMB is that personnel manager of employer, the state employees, as it were, but it delegates its authority to state employers. So make or relators here using terms like DHS, DHS did. Well, DHS was the delegate of MMB's broader personnel managerial authority.
Right. But even if MMB had done it without delegating it, you still have the same question over BMS's authority, do you not?
Correct, Your Honor, yes.
Okay. And is this case substantively different from the BMS decision that I referenced before, the U of M one?
Yeah, the 2003 decision, Your Honor. It is not different.
Was it correctly analyzed by BMS in your view at that time?
It was. The 2003 case is one at which it's facing the same question. A union through a unit clarification petition attempting to designate a single position from one classification to another classification. And BMS looked at that. It looked at its case law. We cite one other case, but just to note, there are more BMS cases addressing this point, and said, we don't have power under PELRA's unambiguous language to assign and allocate positions at that level, but rather it's more so the wholesale classification stage. I'm confused by relator's comment that this is somehow different. It decided the issue correctly, but it's a different case. At the end of the day, it's analyzing 179A.10 subdivision 4. It's analyzing whether it has jurisdiction. So we would say it's apropos to apply it here, or find it maybe not applied, but maybe instructive and persuasive, I should say. And I see my time is up, so I'll just briefly conclude. Your Honors, there are a number of bases to be able to decide this case in state respondents' favor. We've asked that you address those two important threshold issues of standing and jurisdiction, primarily jurisdiction here today, Your Honor. Thank you.
I just ask one quick follow-up, Judge
Conley. Judge Ross.
Should we infer, Ms. Taylor, from your focus on jurisdiction and standing that you see the substantive questions as weaker for your client? Arbitrariness and
absolutely not, Your Honor. I think that is, if we wanted to
what a surprise.
Win, that's where we would have focused. By not asking the court to address the easy question, I could go through and point out substantial evidence that supports all of the reasoning that BMS did. And it's important to note it is a reasoned order. It's not a wholesale dismissive order. It heard what MAPE's reiterated arguments are here today and dismissed them given the weight of the evidence in the employer's favor. So, Your Honor, I could detail those points, but we don't find that to be a weak area at all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. Mr. Cummins, you'll have the last word, please, sir.
Thank you. I'll start with the decision that opposing counsel just addressed and the court asked about. The view of relator here is that decision really is not instructive in that the basis for our challenge here relates to and is based on 179A.04 subdivision 2, which says that BMS shall determine appropriate units. That's the fundamental question here in relator's view, that there is a statutory regime, the PELRA, there is also a statutory regime on which DHS relies, the State Personnel Management Act, and they need to be read together in harmony. The challenge here, again, is not to the classification decision per se. It is to the impact of the classification that happened here.
And if you could, I know you're limited in time. That's the leap that I'm having a really hard time with. We're not arguing whether the light was green or not. We're arguing whether my client had the right of way to go into the intersection because of the color of the lights. I'm having a hard time making the distinction that you're asking us to make on the jurisdictional question. And therefore, I'm having a hard time seeing this case as distinguished from the BMS opinion in 2003 that it lacks jurisdiction.
Yes, Your Honor. I go back to the reclassification of this position in 2017. There was no challenge at that time because there was not a concern on relator's part or any other party's part that the impact of that reclassification caused any bargaining unit to be inappropriate. So there was no question that needed to be addressed by BMS. But there is a concern on the relator's part regarding this classification decision that by transferring the TED position from the existing position to one that's represented by ASME, it is making the existing relator unit inappropriate. And in any event, Your Honor, at the very minimum, a community of interest analysis should have been done here by BMS. The decision here ignores PELRA for all intents and purposes, even though the PELRA governs DHS, governs BMS, governs the relator. And so this decision should be subject to de novo review in terms of the application or lack of application of the PELRA. At a minimum, BMS should have undertaken a community of interest analysis. It didn't even purport to do that. And ultimately, BMS could do that analysis and say, you know what? We looked at this and there's no problem here. These two bargaining units, the one represented by ASME and the one represented by Relator, they're both appropriate. But BMS didn't do any of that, even though it's statutorily required to do so under Section 179A.04, Subdivision 2.
What's the union's position as to the appropriateness of our rendering this as a precedential or a non-precedential opinion?
The Relator doesn't have an official position on that. I don't know that I can articulate.
Assuming we rendered a precedential decision, what is the rule of law, the syllabus point that we would make?
Well, the concern that we have, Your Honor, is...
On the jurisdictional question, by the way, in specific.
The jurisdictional question, the concern on the relator's part is that PELRA would essentially have no application, that there would be no...
Asking you, what's the rule of law that you'd ask us to apply?
Okay.
I understand your argument.
Yes, thank you, Your Honor, for clarifying. That a labor organization like Relator would be able to seek clarification from BMS regarding whether a bargaining unit is appropriate after a position is moved from that position, from that bargaining unit, as part of a classification or reclassification.
Well, you might as well, ask for it all. I mean, Judge Smith, did you have a question? Okay. Mr. Cummins, do you want to sum up then?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. In short, the PELRA is a longstanding established statutory regime, and it must be accounted for in this process in some fashion. It must be harmonized or reconciled with the statutory regime on which the state relies. That did not happen here through the BMS's process, and that's why we are challenging the BMS decision. For all those reasons, we respectfully request that the decision be reversed and at the very least remanded for a community of interest analysis.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cummins. Thank you very much, Ms. Taylor. We appreciate the thoughtfulness of the briefs and the excellent arguments that were just presented.
I just wanted to point out that I don't know if this is unsettling for Mr. Cummins, but I don't think, and it certainly won't bear in our decision, but Ms. Taylor, I don't think I've ever seen an advocate smile all the way through her argument from start to finish. I don't know if that says anything about your confidence level, but I mean, of course, your confidence level is not going to affect our decision, but I just wanted to note that for the record, since we're only having an audio recording of these proceedings.
It's a personal habit, Your Honor. Apologies.
Well, I think that's just an indication that you know how to read a panel by its questioning. So thank you very, very much. That being our last oral argument of the day, we are adjourned, and the judges will stay on Zoom. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.